You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose of Sports Talk 790. Today's episode is our weekly SeatGeek-sponsored show. Remember, if you go to SeatGeek.com or use that SeatGeek mobile app and enter the promo code LORockets, you can get a $20 rebate off of your first purchase from SeatGeek. Well, folks, as we chat on this Thursday, it's been almost a week since we chatted last. I think our last episode, I laid out the case for why the Rockets would be much better off with Cleveland winning the NBA Finals over the Warriors, and in true because-of-course fashion, the Warriors are now up 3-0, seem poised not just to win the Finals, but to sweep the entire playoffs, going 16-0, maybe the most dominant team in the history of the NBA. So, yeah, certainly this is not what you wanted as a Rockets fan, or even as an NBA fan as a whole, I would say. And I'm going to talk about that in just a few minutes. Going to be joined by MK Bauer, Rockets beat writer for the Sports Exchange, also formerly of the Houston Chronicle and Culture Map. Love picking MK's brain about big picture philosophical stuff, and so that's why I want to get his sense for what the Warriors' dominance means for both the Rockets and the NBA as a whole the next 2 years, how you can possibly build a contender against that. So we are going to get to that in just a few minutes. But for now, I do want to start off with a new segment I'm going to debut this month called Rumor Roundup, and that segment's basically self-explanatory in the name, where I just give quick-hitting reactions to the rumors of the day. Now, we don't have too many at this time because with the NBA Finals going on, there's a pretty clear directive from the league office. They don't want that many leaks, even related to the draft. And of course, the Rockets don't have a first-round draft pick. They only have two in the second round. But especially with regards to potential free agents, the NBA really discourages leaks this time of year because they want the focus to be on the games themselves, on the NBA Finals, especially when you have a team like the Warriors, maybe the most dominant team ever. That's where the NBA wants their focus. So there hasn't been a lot of rumors, but there will be throughout the month. I think it's especially going to pick up starting this weekend or whenever these finals finally come to a close and we start looking closer to the draft, which is on Thursday the 22nd, 2 weeks from today. And then, of course, the free agency frenzy, which starts July 1st, just a little over a week following the draft. But the one news that has broken in the past week, and maybe broken isn't the right word because we've heard hints before, but courtesy of Jonathan Fagan at the Houston Chronicle, we've heard that the Rockets are indeed planning to sign Zhou Qi this offseason. He, of course, is their 7'2 second-round pick out of China last year. Even though he's 7'2, he's not really a true center because he's not particularly strong. If you've looked at any pictures, you know the toothpick legs, the similar arms, that sort of thing. He's more of a poor man's Porzingis, you might say, in terms of he's 7'2", but he plays on the perimeter. He has a lot of intrigue. There's a lot of talent because you look at that length, also his ability to shoot the ball. You look at his high IQ. He can be disruptive on the defensive end of the floor because of the length. Offensively, he's got a very solid all-around game. Actually earned a lot of praise from Kevin Durant last summer after one of the Team USA versus China games. Said the player drafted by Houston, long, agile, can shoot really well. So there's always been a lot of potential there. That's why the Rockets drafted him. And some people actually thought that he might go in the first round last year. That's how much of a talent he is. But there's a lot of work to do, and it was just a matter of who's willing to take the long-term project risk there. And first things first, I think with any international player, there's always a little skepticism from the Houston community. Is this another Sergio Yule case where maybe the player doesn't want to play? I think we can pretty firmly say at this point that Zhou Qi does want to play in the NBA. This is not a Sergio Yule. He's been to Houston several times this year. It feels like every couple of months there's a new photo of Qi at Toyota Center talking with Daryl Morey, the Rockets front office. I'm sure they're giving him some nutritional advice, workouts, all the things he can do to continue building his body. So first step, does he want to play in the NBA? I think it's pretty clear at this point that he does, and it seems like a deal is going to get done this offseason. And as far as initial takeaways, first, it's positive because it shows that at least the Rockets think it's worthy of happening now. Because if you bring Qi over, he is going to end up, barring some extraordinary circumstance, being in your final 15 or 16 roster spots. This is not a case where, you know, you can take up to 20 players to training camp. So, yeah, we'll see if he works. No, if you weren't convinced that you're going to actually give him a roster spot, you would just leave him in China where you could hold on to his rights. If you bring him here and then cut him after training camp because you don't think he's ready, then you just lose his rights altogether. So I think it's pretty clear. If you bring him over, you go all through the diplomatic channels, all the things necessary to bring him from China to the United States, and you essentially trade him being just an international player you hold rights to a player that's actually under contract with you, it's pretty clear that that he's going to be in the final 15 or 16. And that's a big deal, because if he weren't ready at all, you would just keep his rights and kind of just hope and pray he continues to get better in China. If you're going to take the leap and basically say in June, hey, we know we're going to give this guy one of our final 15 or 16 roster spots, then that in and of itself is a little bit of a statement of support in terms of the development of his game. The real reason that they're bringing him here, though, I really think it's to gain full control over his strength and conditioning. Now, I'm not going to say that he can't earn a rotation spot. I think the Rockets are always open to competition. If somebody plays really well in training camp, sure, they can earn a role as soon as next year. I mean, the Rockets are always open to as much competition as possible, and that's the smart thing to do. However, the reality, while Chi has a pretty strong athletic talent base, there's a lot of things to build on with him. The big question mark is the strength. He has to get stronger, he has to do it in such a way that he doesn't lose the athleticism, because when you're 7'2", it's tough to have the athleticism to play at the four. He's not going to be tough enough to play inside, so you're looking at really a stretch four, but you also have to have a little bit of athleticism to play on the perimeter, even just a little bit. So there's always a very fine line to walk between bulking up and not bulking up so quickly that you lose your athleticism. The Chinese leagues are notorious for kind of overworking players, not really focusing on their long-term development so much as just the day-to-day grind. So I think the Rockets want full control, whether it's at the end of the bench in Houston or whether they send him down to the Valley. They want full control over his day-to-day, how to continue to work with his body. Because I'm sure they've given him nutritional advice. I'm sure they've given him weight pointers, all that kind of stuff. But when they don't see him every day, it's impossible to have the level of control. I think that's what the Rockets are really trying to do with this. I think they'd love for him to be a contributor this year. However, it's probably unlikely. I think you're probably looking at still a year or so away from him actually being a rotation player at the NBA level. But for him to get there, they really need to monitor his work in the weight room, his nutrition on a day-to-day basis. And the best way to do that is to get him in the organization. And if you want to look at kind of a roadmap for him, I would point to Clint Capela. Now, I know Clint Capela is a center, whereas Chi is a four. I know Clint is not from China, but they kind of had the same dynamic in that when they were drafted, very young players with those toothpick legs. And the thing with Clint, as you guys have seen, it is a multi-year process. In fact, after 3 years, I think it's still ongoing for Clint to build up the strength, to build up more durability, more stamina, all that sort of thing, without compromising that quick twitch athleticism that makes him so rare at that spot to begin with. And with Clint, there was never an aha moment where Clint just suddenly became a great player. It's something, well, not that he's great, but he's certainly a above average center, I should say, at the NBA, and still continuing to improve. The thing with Clint, it's just been slow growth every year, and so that's what you want to start with Chi. But for him to begin that process, the Rockets need to fully get with him in the weight room, because really the way to do it is going to be slow and gradual. You don't want to do it too much too soon, because you are, at that point, you would be risking something compromising the athleticism. And Chi is going to need athleticism. He wants to be a four with the way the NBA is going. He needs to be able to play in space. That's one thing that Kevin Durant pointed out his agility. And so while he needs to get stronger, he's also going to do it in such a way that he maintains that agility that gives him a chance to play as a four in the modern NBA. Now, as far as what his upside actually is, like I said, he's still kind of a blank canvas. There's a lot of work that can be done. You see the tools defensively. He's got the length to be a disruptor. Also has good instincts as far as a shot blocker. I think a poor man's Porzingis is a good comparison. Offensively, not really great at creating his own shot, but a very solid mid-range game. Continues to work to develop that all the way out to the three-point line. So while it's certainly not, I wouldn't say he has star potential, because you don't really see the ability to truly create his own offense that well. At the same time, you look at a guy who can be disruptive defensively, hopefully hit from the three-point line, and it would be a really solid player in the mid-range game. Yes, there's a way for a player at 7'2" with those skills to be a rotation player in the NBA. The one question you have to keep an eye on, of course, is his age. Now, he's listed at 21 years old, and I'm going to call him 21 because it's not fair to speculate. You can only go with what you have. However, there have been reports that he might be closer to 24 or 25. If that's the case, that does probably limit the upside a little bit in terms of what you can do with his body. You have to hope that he's 21 and that those rumors aren't true. But those rumors, you can't always believe them, because those are always out there with international players. There are a few international players who have been older than their birth certificate, but that also becomes a stereotype, and there are many that, well, that's not the case. You don't really know. So for me, I don't see it as fair to really assume the worst with that until I have evidence. Otherwise, I'm going to assume that the birth certificate is real. And if he's 21 years old with these types of skills and still kind of in the formative years in terms of developing his body, then that's something the Rockets are right to have a lot of optimism about. And so it's great they're going to get him here. I'd be surprised if he earns real playing time next season with the Rockets. He still seems a little bit raw, especially in terms of the physical development of his body. But I do think within a year or two, he absolutely could, with that skill set, be a rotation player. And the best way to make that happen is for the Rockets to get full control over his body as soon as possible when it comes to developing more strength in such a way that does not diminish the athleticism that he needs to play on the perimeter at 7'2" in the modern NBA. So that's about it for Joe Chi talk. I do want to get back to kind of the leading theme of the day, which is the ridiculously dominant Warriors, what that means for the Rockets, the NBA as a whole. I'm going to do that in just a moment with MK Bauer, Rockets beat writer for the Sports Exchange, also formerly of the Houston Chronicle and Culture Map. But before I get to that, I do want to throw a shout out to our wonderful friends and sponsors over at SeatGeek, because without them, we would not be able to bring this show to you as frequently as we do here at Locked On Rockets, the most frequent Rockets podcast in the entire NBA community. Now, SeatGeek, I know I say during the year that, well, you should use them to get Rockets tickets. Well, it's the summer. There are no Rockets games for still several more months. I know, it's really sad. However, Houston is still a great sports city. It's a great entertainment city. And, well, if you want entertainment, I can't think of a much more fun team than the Houston Astros, leading Major League Baseball, by far the best record. They're starting tomorrow. They are home for a 9-game homestand against some pretty big-name opponents, the Angels, the Rangers, and the Boston Red Sox next weekend. If you want to get tickets to that, or, well, any other event in Houston that includes concerts, the Dynamo, pretty much everything under the sun, SeatGeek, to me, is the place to get it done. Because, quite simply, with SeatGeek, you get the best bang for your buck. You get the best value. They cross-compare all the different websites, so you know you're getting the best deal. They also grade every ticket from 1 to 100, so you know where the true values are. And the best part of it, you guys, as my listeners here at SeatGeek, here at Locked On Rockets, excuse me, you get a $20 discount at SeatGeek by using the promo code LORockets, and it's just so easy. To get it done, here's what you do. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, then enter the promo code LORockets. From there, SeatGeek will send you $20 in the mail via rebate after you've made your first ticket purchase. So remember, download that SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LORockets today. And folks, as I've told you before, this applies to pretty much every sport across the board. I really think the ticketing marketplace is progressively moving more and more towards secondary sources having a lot more value. Because with the dynamic pricing model, we've seen it with the Rockets, we especially see it with the Astros. If your team plays well, the box office is going to find ways to kind of jack up those prices in the market. So if you're really looking for just single games, or think the majority of fans are, the best way to do it is to kind of buy from those season ticket holders who are kind of grandfathered into lower rates. So secondary markets, those are kind of the way to go, in my opinion, with the current ticketing dynamics the way they are. And, well, for the reasons I just said, SeatGeek, to me, seems like the pretty clear choice among those secondary providers. So, with that said, jumping back into the show, don't want to delay any longer. I want to talk about Joe Chi because, well, that's a little more positive because he's a young player, a lot of talent. Rockets have his rights. Second-round pick last year out of China. Seems like he's going to come to Houston this season. And, well, that's a player you can potentially see as part of the team's core moving forward if he pans out. Now, there's a big question, just as there are with a lot of young players, but at least that's hope. That's someone you can continue to get better and maybe especially 4 or 5 years from now can be a good player in the NBA. Unfortunately, now we kind of need to shift to talking about the next year or two. It's easy to talk about 4 or 5 years because then you can see a future where opportunity seems there. You don't know what the league is going to look like, and maybe someone like Joe Chi develops. Maybe James Harden's still at 32, 33, depending on how he conditions his body, is still an upper echelon player in the NBA. We'll see what happens. Unfortunately, the near term is not as fun to talk about, in my opinion, because while the Rockets are certainly a good team, 55 wins, 3 seed in the West, now you have to deal with the prospect of building a contender opposite the Golden State Warriors, in my opinion, the most dominant team in the history of the NBA, about to go 16-0 through the playoffs. I hope the Cavs prove me wrong with a win in Game 4, but I would thoroughly be shocked, as I think would most of you, judging from the Twitter reactions since last night's game. So to kind of shift back our focus to a little more intermediate, or not, I shouldn't say intermediate, more immediate term with the Rockets and how in the world they're going to try and build a contender to challenge the Warriors next year. I'm going to be joined in just a moment by N.K. Bauer, as I said leading off, current Rockets beat writer for the Sports Exchange, formerly the Houston Chronicle and Culture Map. And while if you follow him on Twitter, you know he's a very philosophical type guy. I love picking his brain about this kind of stuff. So when I think, how in the world do you compete with these Warriors? He's one of the first guys that kind of jumped to mind as a good interview source to kind of bounce ideas off. So if you stick with me for just a few seconds, I'm going to get M.K. connected right here on Locked On Rockets. M.K., how's it going, man?
It's fantastic. How are you?
As good as can be. Good personal day for me, about to go on vacation in a few hours, but not so much as an NBA fan. I think there's kind of an awkward dynamic on Twitter right now. I've been talking about the last few minutes. You have fans that would normally, even with the Rockets out, be engaged this time of year with the NBA Finals, the product, that feel very just kind of disconnected, disengaged, whatever you want to call it, because of how historically dominant the Warriors are. So one of the first things I wanted to ask you about is just kind of how you're feeling as someone I know that's a big fan of the NBA product. I know there's a certain greatness to the Warriors and the greatness to LeBron James that's fun to watch. But at the same time, does the argument resonate with you that at the same time the NBA has never been less competitive from a true contention standpoint than it is right now?
Strange to kind of go through the process of watching these NBA finals and get this overriding feeling that it's a waste of your time. And there were moments in time during game three where I was watching that game and kind of toggling back and forth between it and the Astros-Royals game because there's a lack of compelling narrative with the Golden State-Cleveland series simply because you know the outcome. There's a sense of a foreboding that no matter what Cleveland does, it's all going to be irrelevant. And I think that kind of came to the forefront in game three that LeBron was fantastic. Kyrie played out of his mind. The effort level of Cleveland throughout the course of the game was as high as it's been throughout the course of this entire postseason. Mm-hmm. And they still gave up an 11-0 run at the end of the game to lose. And I don't want to be fatalistic about this. And I think to an extent, a lot of the wailing and crying online about where the league is heading with Golden State being as dominant as they are is a little bit excessive. But when you look at the core of that team, and if you understand that they have an option of keeping that group together, why would you feel good about the league going in a direction other than a direction it's going in? I think right now it's pretty clear they're head and shoulders better than everybody else in the league. And if you keep Draymond Green and Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson together, I don't understand how you can formulate a squad that's better than that group because of what they do offensively and, most important, defensively. I think we saw elements of that in game three last night, that when they need to lock down guys, they have multiple players on the court who can do so defensively. So, you know, we've all kind of fallen victim to this narrative of, oh, look at this young team. It's a great core. They're going to win forever. We felt that was interesting. Yesterday was the 22nd anniversary of the Rockets beating the Magic in game one, where Nick Anderson missed those four free throws at the end of the game. And I remember watching that game thinking, oh, Penny and Shaq, they'll be back here multiple times. They never got back. And 5 years ago, we had Oklahoma City with Durant and Westbrook and Harden, and you're thinking they'll be back multiple times, and they never got back. So I don't want to take anything for granted because things happen. But as presently constructed, when you watch this team, I don't see how you can put a team on the court that's better than them. And if they do keep the squad together, all those guys in their prime, it could be a stretch of time where they're dominating the league, and I don't think that's quite what anybody wants.
And I've thought of those comparisons myself, and the difference, obviously, the 2012 Thunder, they lost to the Heat, the 96 Magic, they lost to the Bulls before Shaq left. But, of course, those teams, you know, they probably would have made it back a lot of times, but they were upended by free agency, Shaq going to L.A. in 96, Harden wasn't a free agent, but essentially didn't sign the contract, found his way to Houston a few months after those 2012 finals. And so both of those cases, you know, free agency kind of ravaged the core that fans thought they had. And that's what's so hard to imagine with the current Warriors, because it's kind of hard for me. I mean, you know me, MK. I'm always thinking, you know, a year or two in advance, who might leave, who might go in free agency. And it's just so hard to come up with a scenario where one of those guys leaves. I mean, about the only one I can come up with, you know, maybe after a couple of years of this, you can make the argument that Klay Thompson, maybe he wants more of a role somewhere. But even if he wants to do that, I mean, he's under contract for like three more years. So it's just such an awkward dynamic, and that, you know, you respect their greatness. They're certainly earning it. But at the same time, from a standpoint of the rest of the league, competitive balance, it's not very fun. And
I want to piggyback on a point you made about Klay Thompson, because it's interesting. I think that's something that's kind of been floating out there, mm-hmm. that ultimately he would get tired of kind of being the fourth wheel. And in terms of stardom, he is the fourth wheel. It's KD and Steph. Draymond has kind of, I think, ascended and bypassed Klay Thompson, and then there's Klay. But then you watch games like Game 3 where he scores 16 points in the first quarter. You're like, man, he can do this at any given moment, and he's such a dynamic scorer. And then late in the game, he's locking guys down defensively. Mm. He has to understand how important he is to what they are. And if Eagle ever comes into play and he thinks about going someplace else where he could be the man, you would really be hesitant to understand the concept of him doing that, because he has to acknowledge, man, I could win multiple championships here being the best fourth player on the team in league history. Yeah. And I think that would be a strength, a huge lure for him to stay, even though I think he makes a incredibly valid point that ultimately the time may come where he may think, I have to go someplace where I'm the number one guy.
Right, and the thing is, that's just me kind of wishful thinking. I admit, logically, I'm right there with you. He enjoys winning. I think the uniqueness of this team, that role, it's so unprecedented in NBA history that, you know, I kind of struggle to see him being the type to just go out. I'm just thinking of, you know, even if it's just 5 or 10%, the only even fathomable scenarios where that core four, someone peels off. That's about the only thing I can come up with. And well, even if you wanted to, the Warriors done such a good job balancing the contracts. Well, I shouldn't say they've done such a great job balancing the contracts. Let's just be real. The biggest thing there, they kind of got lucky with the Stephen Curry contract, and that, you know, they gave him that four-year deal when there were some concerns with his ankles, and then you combine that cheap four-year deal with the sudden explosion of the salary cap, and now all of a sudden, you know, you could add Durant, you can sign Draymond and Klay to their long-term near max deals, and then you can, you know, use bird rights to, you know, finally give Curry what he deserves on the back end of it. So, yeah, Curry's certainly underpaid, but it's kind of a fine line. You certainly give the Warriors credit for building the team. Definitely a little bit of luck there, too, because certainly I don't think the Warriors, when they gave Stephen Curry that contract 4 or 5 years ago, believed that this was fathomable, the MVP candidate that he's turned into every single year. And MK, to kind of swing forward to my next point, what I want to ask you about, with the Rockets specifically, normally you'd feel pretty good. You know, you've got Harden, he's going to be 28 years old, still in his prime, 3 seed, 55 wins. But when you look at the league as a whole, would you rather be the Rockets, or would you rather be a team like, you know, Philadelphia or Minnesota, a team with Karl-Anthony Towns, Joel Embiid, that's building for 3, 4, 5 years from now? Because normally you'd almost always say the Rockets, and I think especially given the ownership, the GM, I would still say the Rockets. But there's at least an argument you could make that maybe these teams, you know, with these young, talented players, the Karl-Anthony Towns of the world, that you're almost better off now, given the Warriors building for 3 or 4 years, than it is trying to build a contender in the next year or so. So I'm curious where you kind of fall.
I don't even think it's that much of an argument. I think your point is incredibly valid. Look, he'll be 28 soon. And then the core of guys around him, Eric Gordon, well, the guys who are under contract for multiple years, Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, Patrick Beverley, those guys are all 28, 29, 30 in that range. You're assuming that they're not going to keep dealing with Trevor Ariza. This is the last year of his contract moving forward. You're assuming that Clint Capella is going to be here at 23 years old. He's going to be an anchor part of this team. That squad's not good enough to beat Golden State. And they're not going to be good enough to beat Golden State the next 3 or 4 years, assuming that Steph and KD and Klay and Dre all stay together. Mm-hmm. So, yes, the window is beyond that. The window is once Steph gets into his early 30s and maybe loses a little bit of his quickness, maybe the window is once KD stays a couple more years, wins 2 more championships and realizes, you know what, I want to do something else. I want to be the man again and not to defer or share any of the spotlight with anybody else. Maybe that's when the window opens up again for other teams in the league. And if that's the case, yeah, you're better positioned to be Philadelphia or beat Minnesota when you have a bunch of guys who are 20, 21 years old who are your core developing and growing and playing together, then when they're 25, 26, they could be the team that runs the league, or at least in a contention to run the league.
Yeah,
I just don't know where the Rockets go from here. You know, you've built the squad around James Harden, and everything else, to an extent, is kind of interchangeable. I think it's pretty clear that they're not going to cleave themselves to any one guy outside of James from this point moving forward for the next 3 or 4 years. That's not good enough. And I think, obviously, there's discussions to be had about the way James performs in a postseason over the last 4 years with the Rockets that leave you questioning whether or not he is the guy to lead any franchise to a championship based on his performance in clutch situations in the postseason. So, yeah, I think ideally you want to win. Everybody wants to win. 55 wins is a beautiful thing. I don't like the whole idea of dismissing what happens in the regular season based solely on what happens in the postseason. The two go hand in hand. You should enjoy having a good season. The Rockets had a fantastic season. You should ride with that. But the those championships, and you recognize the best team in the league is far and away better than everybody else, even in your conference specifically, I don't know how you attack that. I don't know what the next course of action is for Daryl Morey and a front office, because there are no players available in free agency that you can add to your squad that's going to get you past Golden State. And their attack this season about being the best offensive team they could possibly be, that's fine and dandy. You can't discard how good Golden State is defensively. And until you get somewhat better, markedly better defensively, you're never going to get into their stratosphere.
Yeah, and the thing with Harden, to get back to the larger theme, which is the window, he's going to be 28. And I know a lot of people say, well, he has a lot of prime years left. Well, James has had a lot of mileage. Obviously, a big point of discussion after the Spurs series was the Rockets' basically refusal to rest him this year, that sort of thing. Don't really want to get into that discussion because that's all speculation. But I think the one thing that's pretty clear, a 28-year-old James Harden has a lot of mileage on those legs. And so if you're talking about the window for the first time opening in 3 or 4 years when he's 31 or 32, I think it's fair to question just how good he's going to be. Now, certainly, I don't think he's going to fall off the map. Harden's a guy, I would say it's pretty clear that Harden's athleticism has slipped a little bit just relative to the first year or two that he was in Houston, 2012, 2013. And certainly his IQ is such that he can still be a very productive player. At times, you make the argument, the MVP of the league this year. But certainly, if you're talking about him at 31 or 32, can he be a part of a contender? Sure he can. Can he be the undisputed number one, especially at that age in his 30s? I don't know. That might be an awful lot to ask. So, yeah, I totally get the pessimism on that front. And just looking at this summer in particular, the other thing to kind of tie in with what you're saying about this Rockets team, they're kind of a weird mix. Even if you take Golden State out of the equation, which is hard to do, you look at their rotation, the eight guys they had in the playoffs, I'm assuming they want to bring back Nene. It sounds like he wants to come back as well. And then you add in Sam Decker and Montrezl Harrell, both of which had pretty decent roles at various points this year. You essentially have 10 average or maybe even better than average rotation players, at least at points, at least eight, and then depending on where you fall with Decker and Harrell, you can make the argument of 10. But I guess where I'm going with that, a lot of NBA teams, if you have moderate money, which the Rockets have, they might can say, hey, we know we need a shooter, we need a rebounder, we need a shot blocker. There's a certain guy on a market where they can just go for a niche player. The Rockets, they can't really bring in a niche player because, you know, the entire rotation is either average or better. So the Rockets, it's not like they can just go out and sign a mid-level guy and upgrade. And so to me, that puts them, even independent of Golden State, in a really difficult spot, because for the Rockets, it almost has to be quality over quantity because they have so many solid guys already. It seems like the only things they could do would be to, you know, legitimately upgrade. Obviously, you're not going to upgrade Harden, but one of the other starting spots. Does that make sense where I'm going with that? It's just you can't really bring in a depth player in Houston with the rotation the way it is right now.
I think what became clear to everyone as you watched this team through the course of the year is that the one glaring need was for another primary ball handler to complement James Harden. It really wasn't Lou Williams. I think to an extent Eric Gordon gave you that in spells, but you need another guy that can do what Harden does. It's not as good as what Harden does because those guys obviously are rare and far and few in between. And that guy's not available. So I think what you're saying is, how do you add someone with a very specific skill set to a team at a in terms of what it does? And I don't know where you find that guy or how you shoehorn that guy into the squad without really kind of revamping the entire roster on the fly, because that guy's going to cost you some money. So you're going to have to discard some players in order to squeeze that guy in, whoever that guy may be, that can alleviate some of that ball pressure handling on Harden and move this team forward. There's a hump there. I think it's pretty clear that you see that hump between the Rockets and true championship contention. They've kind of gotten to the edge of it. They're right at the precipice of maybe kind of moving up, but they're still missing a key piece. And whoever that key piece may be, you have to find a way to get them, you have to find a way to fit them in, and you have to find a way to adjust the roster again on the fly to make the team even better than it was this past year. 55 wins was fantastic, but it's not going to get you where you want to get. It's going to get you to a point, and you're going to keep running to the wall. So whoever that player might be, they have to really think about the big picture of adding that player, adjusting everything who they are in terms of the DNA, and then hoping it's going to be enough. And that's the key part. Even if phases one and two work, phase three is the most critical part of this, because still you have to get past Golden State. And I just don't see where that one player is going to add to the Rockets and make them a better team than the Warriors.
I thought you made a good point about Lou Williams as well. To me, it was one of those ideas that seemed better on paper than reality in terms of his actual approach on the floor. His skill set overlapped with Eric Gordon's a little too much, whereas what you want is a little more of a facilitator. So it's one of those ideas. I get what Gerald Morey was thinking at the time, just put all the bombers around there and hope that, you know, if you get to that series against Golden State, that you get that all of those guys from three get hot at the right time. But in terms of how it actually worked out, you'd want more of a facilitator. And I kind of want to get back to that point, MK, about the facilitator, someone else that can create. It seems like there's kind of two factions of Rockets, because I think we both agree you can't just bring in, you know, a rudimentary, you know, sixth or seventh man. That's not really, you know, they have $10 million, bring in a mid-level player. Well, they don't really have a need for that. If you want to upgrade the team, it needs to be more substantial. And, you know, pretty much all of those contracts are movable. Morey's done a good job. Pretty much everybody has positive trade value other than maybe Ryan Anderson. But so, you know, you could create more room if the right guy theoretically came available. But it seems like there's kind of two factions of Rockets fans. There's Group A, and I've talked about this before, that is kind of concerned about the forward spots. You look at Trevor Ariza with his age. You look at Ryan Anderson with his defensive deficiencies. And, of course, Ryan Anderson's athleticism seems to be slipping a staggering amount with each year. And so you see guys wanting more of a two-way presence at one of those forward spots to build around moving forward. And then there are guys in Camp B, and it sounds like you're in this camp, that's less concerned about those guys and more concerned about just the idea of another facilitator, essentially to relieve some of the burden of creation off of James Harden. So I'm just curious if you could kind of contrast those two groups and kind of explain why you're in that second group, if in fact you are.
Because I think what became clear to me is that this team is still so dependent upon James Harden. And his elevation of his game this season, really specifically the jump in assists, was a byproduct of him having better shooters. But the responsibility was still there. The ball was still in his hands a great deal of the time. He still was asked to do everything for his team. And when the offense looked completely different because it wasn't still one guy who could get to the rim, who could draw fouls, who could make threes, who could feed other guys with three-point shots. You really didn't have that. And I think ideally you would have someone who can fill that void specifically when he's not on the court, or who can complement him at the same time when he is on the court, and they don't have that one player. I think as much as they would improve by having a little bit more versatility in their front court, a younger, better 3-and-D player, or someone, a stretch four who can play the other end of the court and actually rebound a little bit, unlike Ryan Anderson, I think that helps you. But I think with their most glaring deficiency is what they don't have when Harden is not on the court. And I understand that their plus-minus numbers were good without Harden. I get that. But when you watch this team play in a postseason series and teams lock in on one guy over the course of six or seven games, it becomes different. And I think their most obvious opportunity to advance is someone who could leave that burden on Harden and make him less responsible for everything that goes on the squad. And if you could stop that for you to move forward and maybe get to the top of that hump and fight Golden State for something, a supremacy in the West, and then ultimately a championship. I just don't think adding a front court player changes the overall dynamic of your team. It makes you maybe better in the regular season, but once it gets down to the postseason, you're going to have the same problems of when Harden sits or when Harden gets tired, who's running your offense and where does your offense go and how efficient are they?
The other tricky thing about adding a backcourt player to me is that, you know, you have so many bodies there already. So if you want to add a facilitator, you can absolutely do it. I'm right there with you on the logic of your argument. But you have not just Harden, but obviously Pat Beverly, Eric Gordon, Lou Williams. If you were trying to bring in someone new, even if you were to say move Lou, which is the easiest one, that frees up what, 20, 25 minutes? You know, if you bring in the kind of player, and again, we're talking abstractly here, it will one of those guys actually be available either in free agency or on the trade market? I guess we'll have to wait and see in early July. But abstractly, even if that were an option, you would have to have some pretty substantial changes, in my opinion, to the rotation. And maybe, as you were saying, the dominance of the Warriors, the fact that the bar seems so high and the Rockets seem so far away, maybe that's an excuse for Daryl Morey to do it. And I'm sort of wondering, and this is one of the last questions I got for you, but in the back of my mind, I'm wondering if maybe Morey ends up being more aggressive this offseason in terms of breaking up that core than you would traditionally expect. Because when you see the Warriors that far away, And then we also know with the Rockets, they have so many guys that are on these great contracts from the earlier salary cap. Both Ariza and Lou, they're up after this coming season, they're both going to get paid. Pat Beverly, he's got two more years, but you know his payday is going to be coming. And all these guys, they're bargains right now because they're signed under that old salary cap. And I'm just wondering, normally you win 55 games, you have all the good chemistry, you know, we're both there almost every game, we see the good vibes, all that kind of stuff. Normally I think you just run it back, just say, hey, we've got something good, we're not going to mess with it. But I'm almost wondering if with the Warriors this good, it might make Morey a little more, it might make Daryl more interested in experimenting. Because if you want to add in someone, you're certainly going to have to change the dynamics of the roster to fit, you know, a hypothetical backcourt guy's minutes. And whereas normally you'd make an argument that, hey, the chemistry is really good, all these pieces fit, blah, blah, blah. At the same time, maybe the Warriors this good. Does that make you have to think more big picture? Is that a fair critique?
No, you said it, Ben. The bar's been raised. And I think we all had an idea of how good the Warriors would be with Kevin Durant. Now we've seen it. And it's one thing to kind of go about this whole process year after year of incrementally getting better and trying to, in theory, challenge for a championship as opposed to seeing what the ball it is. And you understand clearly what it's going to take to beat this team and get to the finals. And I think based upon that, Morey understands he can't stand Pat. And as good as the chemistry during a regular season, this team. Period. And you can't stand Pat hoping that it'll get better by another year together, by added chemistry, by maybe guys developing a little bit here and there, even though the core of your players are what they are, they're not going to get better. You talk about the underside of your roster getting better. It's pretty clear you're not good enough to beat the Warriors in a seven-game series and therefore win a championship. So if your goal is that, you can't stand Pat. You can't stick with your current roster and say, hey, we're going to ride with it. And I'll give Morey this. He's never been afraid of change. And I think he understands clearly where the bar is. B, he understands that he's been asked to change before. He'll change again if he needs to change, and I think it's pretty clear he needs to change. So if Ward is your anchor, and you have, you know, Anderson and Gordon by contract, and they're much more difficult to move than a guy like Lou Williams or Patrick Beverley or whoever else you may think about moving, then you move those guys, you add pieces to the puzzle, and you get better. And I think that's clearly what the next step of this whole process is going to be. You find the necessary components to add to your roster to get better with the hope of challenging Golden State. That's it. That's the one primary goal. The championship is going through Oakland, and everything else is secondary. If you stand pat, you're acknowledging that we're going to be the second or third best team in the West again, and then we're hoping that somebody gets hurt for Golden State in the postseason, or maybe something fluky happens and we get that series to a seventh game, and then maybe something lucky breaks our way. But look what they're doing to Cleveland. Cleveland is far and away the best team in the East, and obviously the second best team, maybe against San Antonio in the entire league, and Golden State's going to sweep them. So I don't understand how anybody can look at the current Rockets as they're presently constructing and think, this is good enough. Another year together, this is good enough. Or a couple pieces here and there will be good enough. You need major overhaul to make this team much better, to challenge Golden State. And I think Morey understands that, and I clearly think he's not afraid to make those changes.
Yeah, I don't think he's afraid either. It's just going to come down to what guys are actually available and if it's feasible, if it actually advances all the obvious things. MK, before I let you go, one last question. I want to circle back to your earlier comments about Harden. And that's kind of an interesting dynamic because I feel like a lot of the folks that are still engaged on Rockets Twitter, there's been a lot of rationalizing. There's been a lot of sort of, I don't want to say giving him a pass because people are upset, but saying, hey, he did have a phenomenal workload this year. He probably was tired. It is just one game, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, I'm more disturbed by what happened late in game five than I am in game six. It's certainly just a very disturbing development in which the Rocket Show could have put a hammer lock on that series, pretty much. Explain where you're at, because I know, you know, you reference, you know, I won't say he's been bad in the playoffs in Houston in the past, certainly he's had high moments, but he's had some bad moments. And I think what you're getting at is the inconsistency and whether, you know, you can truly build a championship team with that guy as your undisputed number one. Is it the consistency you're talking about? Just to expand on that point a little bit before we wrap up.
Yeah, he's woefully inconsistent, and I don't understand how you can feel confident about him being your lead dog based on how inconsistent he's been in the postseason previously. And look, he has all the talent in the world, and I think that's where it stops. I'm really hesitant to get into this whole conversation about killer instinct and Mamba mentality. I think a lot of this is narrative mumbo-jumbo, but there's something within him that makes you question if it all is on the line, I know exactly how this guy is going to perform. And I don't feel that way about him. I think the talent is there. I think the basketball IQ is there. I think we've seen enough of him in the postseason to wonder, will he come through at the end of the game that's going into overtime? Will we need him to drag this team to the finish line, or is he going to miss a bunch of shots and not get to the rim and hold the ball and settle for jumpers? Is he going to show up in game six at home when the other team is injured and really just kind of hoping for a game seven at their place, or is he going to play, you know, mediocre basketball, score 10 points, have seven turnovers, and look disinterested? I think there's been enough evidence in his past to suggest that we don't know what James Harden's going to do on any given night. And I don't know if it's based on his personality. I don't know if it's based on his will. I don't know what the issue is with him. I do know he's a very talented player. I do know he's a very bright player. I do also understand that we've seen the very best and the very worst of him in series, in one series. Like, he vacillates wildly. And based on that, that makes me question whether or not you can get anything great accomplished with him unless you have somebody there to provide a rock and be an anchor alongside him. Maybe the personality that he doesn't have, maybe a guy that can fill that room up and challenge other guys and lead them. I don't know, but there's something about the way he plays games in the postseason with a consistency that bothers me or that concerns me, that makes me wonder if it's ever going to be that guy out front leading the team to a championship.
That's completely fair. I'd like him to prove you wrong. And in the past, I've kind of made excuses. I've said that I do think some of it with his particular game, I think he's, I don't want to say dependent on officiating, but there are certain things that he needs. And I think it's at times he lets the lack of whistles negatively affect other components of his game, essentially get psyched out. But at the same time, he's about to turn 28. He's the undisputed number one. You can only make those excuses for so long. At some point, you know, you have to play through it the same way other guys do. And that's just something that he has to get better at. And while there's still time, he's certainly running out of it. I think you probably, as we were saying earlier, you're looking at just 2, 3, maybe 4 years left of truly prime James Harden. And, he's not out of time, but it's certainly it's something that's fair to have concerns about at this point. MK, thank you so much for the time. Before I let you go, throw out your Twitter handle, your outlets. Obviously, I know you're pretty busy covering the Astros these days, especially when they're home, and now they got a, what, 9-game homestand coming up on Friday. So basically, just tell folks where they can find you.
Yeah, I do work for the Sports Exchange, and my Twitter handle is Moise Kapenda, MoiseKapenda, where we discuss a lot of things other than sports, to be honest. So if you're interested, join in. And kind of follow along. It's going to be interesting, some of the Astros clearly being the best team in baseball, and maybe that will be a salve for people who are still wounded over what the Rockets did in the postseason.
You're not panicking over the bullpen performances the last 2 days?
I'm more concerned about them adding another starter. I think the bullpen's performances are tied into the lack of a third starter who can give you innings.
Yep.
I think they've been overworked their bullpen. And Hintz has talked about that. He understands that I'm overworking my bullpen. I can only do so much with what I have. They need a Chris Archer or a Garrett Cole or somebody of that ilk to kind of come in and get you 7 innings every time he gets on the mound.
Yep, I'm right there with you. That's why I said after what happened. Obviously the Wednesday game was just a throwaway. When you have Diaz starting on 5 minutes notice because of Keuchel's illness, that's just a throwaway game. Tuesday, the real issue is that as great as that lineup is, if you're 3 out of 5 games just essentially praying to get 5 innings, which is what they're doing, at some point that cumulative stroll, that cumulative stress, I should say, is going to take a toll on your bullpen, whether it be a physical toll or a mental toll. I think there's just a lot of cumulative stress when 3 out of 5 days you're essentially asking them to give you at least 4 innings. And I think that eventually caught up with them. Whereas what you need, obviously, is a third starter, a guy after Dallas and Lance McCullers that you can trust and that feel good about that, hey, this guy's going to get me 6 or 7 innings. I'm not going to be having to string this entire bullpen for 4 or 5 innings on a given night if that's what the situation calls for. And in some ways, the Astros offense feels like it almost makes it, you know, more stressful in the bullpen because they're never out of a game offensively, so you're always tempted to use those relievers to kind of keep you in it. But at the same time, when you have only 2 reliable starters give you 6 innings, yeah, that stuff can eventually catch up with you. Anyway, MK, thank you so much. Go ahead.
Yeah, the other shoe dropping is them adding a third starter. Period. Everything else is just waiting. We're waiting for this team to continue to be great, but they have to add another starter before you understand what they're really going to be.
Yep, agree. MK, thank you so much for the time, and I'll be catch up with you at Minute Maid Park sometime soon. All right, man.
Thank you, Ben.
Sure thing. That's MK Bowers, the Sports Exchange, formerly Houston Chronicle and Culture Map. Really good discussion. Wanted to close out with a little bit of Astros talk. I know this is a Rockets podcast, but well. wanted to throw something positive in there because certainly with the Rockets, the NBA as a whole, it's hard to be that positive over the next 2 or 3 years. And with regards to the Rockets with James Harden, Eric Gordon, so many in the prime of their careers, it's just really bad timing. So hopefully at least the references to the Astros give you something positive to take out of it. Big picture, I thought MK was right on the money. I might quibble a little bit with the notion of the backcourt score versus the forward spots, because I'm a big believer in just more two-way players in general in Mike D'Antoni's scheme. I don't necessarily think James Harden has to have, although it would help, I'd be on board. I think that's an option. It wouldn't, you know, turn me off if that's what they did. But I think they can also go to the forward spot. It might be easier to go to forward spot two when you look at the options on the market, the likes of Danilo Gallinari, Paul Millsap, Serge Ibaka, even Blake Griffin, Gordon Hayward, if you could somehow get in the game for those A-list free agents. It seems easier to upgrade the forward spots. Don't seem to be as many true creators. But I do think that point's very valid. I think it ties into a little bit. We've talked about Sergio Yule in the past. Now, Yule is obviously unproven. It wouldn't be fair to give him a lot of money or expect a ton of responsibility out of him. But it's that same principle, whereas I think you do need more diversity in skill sets. The Lou Williams trade looked good on paper. In reality, there's just too much of an overlap between him, Eric Gordon. And so do you break up your team to bring in that kind of piece at the backcourt spot right now? Some of it's going to depend on what's available. I tend to focus on the four spot a little more because I think you have more of those options actually available on July 1st. Now, that's based on what we know in free agency. The thing we don't know, the variable that very well could change this, who's available via trade. We spend a lot of time talking about free agents because we know who's out there and we can say, hey, this guy is or isn't a fit in Houston. What we don't know is truly who's available on the trade market. And one thing that's very intriguing, with the NBA the way it is, I think you might see a few GMs around the league more aggressive than they normally are, because typically you have guys that are willing to ride it out with what they have. Everybody wants to be hopeful. They want to build with chemistry, blah, blah, blah. But the Warriors being this good, I don't think it's just Daryl Morey. I think GMs around the league are going to be open to more radical changes because they know that, A, the window is probably several years off, but B, if they are going to even try and contend in the next 2 or 3 years, you have to be really bold, really outgoing with regards to, you can't be afraid. You can't just be building on chemistry. So I do think it's possible that whereas some teams in the past, you'd say, hey, this team was pretty good. They won 40, 45, 50 games. They seem to be trending in the right direction. They're probably just going to keep the core in place. I think you might see more teams like that willing to make a bold move, either, you know, even more so for the present, bringing in guys to kind of put them over the hump, or building more for that 4 or 5 year range. I think the trickle-down effect might be more players available via trade than normal, simply because you have more people willing to be aggressive, because everybody knows you can't run your team like you normally do with a team like the Warriors. You have to think a little bigger, and perhaps that makes more GMs willing to trade more people on the market. We'll have to stay tuned. That's just something that is worth monitoring over the weeks ahead. As we get closer to the draft, that's when you'll see the first wave of trades, and then especially July 1st once free agency opens in earnest. Whatever happens, though, of course, we'll have you covered right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast coverage of the Houston Rockets. As always, I appreciate you guys for listening to now our 200-plus episodes over the last 9 months. Well, shouldn't say 9 months. Actually, I think we debuted in July last year, so we're almost on the 1 year anniversary of Locked On Rockets. For those of you that have been with us the entire way, I thank you for continuing to tune in. For those of you that are new, I hope you continue listening to us. We've been a little less frequent. We're a daily podcast during the season. We've been a little less frequent the last couple of weeks because, well, there just hasn't been that much news. Everything is kind of shut down. There's a kibosh from the league office on rumors because they really just want all the focus to be on the product on the floor of the NBA Finals. But with that ending as soon as Friday night, I think the rumor mill is going to get really cranked up as we get closer to the draft and free agency. And when that happens, we'll go from being, well, a couple of times a week show to back to a true daily show. So if you want to talk about your Houston Rockets, the good, the bad, the optimistic, the pessimistic, just stick with me right here at Locked On Rockets, and we will have you covered. As always, in addition to the show, if you want to follow me on Twitter, please do that, at Ben Dubose. Talk a lot about the Rockets, the NBA. Also talk a lot about the Astros if you want to hear about that. The show, Locked On Rockets, you can follow us on Twitter, at Locked On Rockets. Also email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, if you've got questions or suggestions for us, or inquiries about how to become a potential sponsor of this program, just as SeatGeek was today. Remember, download that SeatGeek mobile app and use the promo code LORockets, and you can get a $20 rebate off of your first ticket purchase from SeatGeek. LORockets, again, is the code. So for now, I guess I will sign off. Astros do play again tonight, so we have that to look forward to. If you're tired of the NBA, you can focus on that the next few days. And then we'll talk a little more draft the next couple of weeks. It's tough to really preview the draft in the 40s. That's what's really difficult, because when you have two picks in the 40s, yeah, those guys could be contributors. It seems to be a fairly deep draft, but it's hard to preview that much because everything is so conditional. You really have no idea who's going to be available. If you're drafting the first round, you have a pretty good idea of how the draft is going to go. And even if you're, say, in the 15 or 20 range, then you have a good idea of who the possibilities are. When you're in the 40s, it's so open-ended. Your net has to be so wide. There are guys you see in the second round, and they could go anywhere because there's inherently a little more volatility once you get out of the top 15 or 20 of the draft. But then beyond that, you never know who's going to slip. It could be a situation like 2 years ago where nobody thought Montrezl Harrell would fall out of the first round, but then all of a sudden he's there when the Rockets had a high pick in the second round, and, well, a guy who they didn't think was there, well, because he's the best value, he's the pick. And he's been a pretty good player for the Rockets, and I think he's poised to potentially take an even bigger role this coming season. So it's tough to do that much of a true draft preview in terms of running down the prospects because, well, we'd be talking for 2 hours if we tried to talk about every single candidate for the Rockets. But we'll talk a little bit about the directions they might want to go, positions, that sort of thing. And then especially after the draft, I'll try and get all the insight we can about guys that have followed, be it college, internationally, the players, whoever the Rockets draft, and their prospects were contributing to the Rockets, be it in 2017, 2018, which is when Zhou Qi, as I said, leading off, the second-round pick out of China last year, that's when he appears to finally be coming to Houston for next season. Maybe the Rockets get more immediate help. Maybe it's another stash that they're thinking about 2 or 3 years from now. But whatever the case, we'll be right there with you at Lockdown Rockets, covering every step of the way, both on Twitter and right here on the audio program. If you're not already subscribing to this audio program, please do. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom, TuneIn, wherever you can subscribe to media, just search for Lockdown Rockets. Got all of our 200-plus episodes on there. Also, every other NBA and NFL team, we've got you fully covered. Locked on Texans, that's my sister podcast across town, hosted by my buddy Robert Lynn. They're talking about the Texans. They're getting ready for training camp in just another month or so. They've recently had OTAs, doing all the off-season work. Seems like Deshaun Watson's getting continually better with every practice. So if you want everything, all the details about what's going on Kirby, stick with Robert Land over at Locked on Texans. Also, the national Locked on NBA, Locked on NFL shows, those are good listens. And, well, pretty much any podcast, every NBA or NFL team, if you want to talk diehard sports with any particular team, this Locked on Podcast Network is the way to go. And again, just search iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Audio Boom, TuneIn. Wherever you can find Locked on Rockets, you can find any of our podcasts across this Locked on Podcast Network. So if you're pleased with this content, check out a few of our other programs because they might have some stuff that you really enjoy as well. So anyway, for now, I will wrap up. Again, it's been a fun episode talking the first few minutes about Zhou Qi and his potential conversion to Houston starting as early as this summer. We haven't heard officially that he's going to be in the summer league team in July, but if they're trying to bring him in, I would say at least there's an opportunity for that, and that'll be something fun to watch. A guy with a lot of promise, seeing how he stacks up against a lot of the other top young prospects around the league. So that could be fun, talking the first few minutes about that. And then, of course, the last 25 minutes or so, a little more daunting discussion, less fun, a little more foreboding, but it's the reality we live in and we need to adapt to it. How can you possibly build a contender in this era of the Golden State Warriors? And for that, of course, I was joined by my good buddy MK Bauer of the Sports Exchange. Always a thrill to chat and catch up with him. And I think he was a first-time guest here on Lockdown Rockets, but really appreciate him taking the time on this Thursday to chat with us. And even if it's the unfortunate truth, he does spit truth, and, well, it was great to hear from him, even if it wasn't always fun to hear from a Rockets fan perspective. So, with that said, go out and enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Go out and enjoy what's probably the last game of basketball you'll see for a few months in Game 4 of the Finals on Friday night. And then once that's over, I'll be back with you in just a few days talking a little more specifically about whatever rumors come out, what the Rockets are looking to do if they get closer to the draft and July free agency. For now, enjoy your evening.